Meta Practice V1. Chapter 12. Beyond Calm, Wholeness versus Detachment. Chapter 12. Beyond Calm, Wholeness versus Detachment. A great deal of modern self-improvement confuses the reduction of turbulence with the achievement of integrity. If the mind gets quieter, the body gets more regulated, and emotional spikes become less frequent, people often assume the deeper work is complete. Sometimes important healing has happened. Sometimes the person has simply learned to become less reachable. They are calmer. But they are not whole. This distinction matters because the path of metta is sometimes mistaken for a path of mere calm, and the two are very different. Calm is sometimes a sign of integration, sometimes a sign of withdrawal. The difference is worth knowing. Why calm has become so attractive? The attraction is obvious. Modern life is overstimulating. People are flooded by alerts, demands, outrage cycles, financial stress, and ambient uncertainty. Of course, calm begins to look like salvation. And calm is not trivial. A person who cannot regulate themselves will have difficulty loving well. A nervous system trapped in panic, compulsion, or constant reactivity narrows the field of choice. Rest matters. Silence matters. Practices that help the body settle can be deeply humane. But it is possible to overcorrect. A culture exhausted by chaos may start treating disturbance itself as the main problem. Then the highest good becomes non-activation. Do not get pulled in. Do not care too much. Do not react. Do not need. Do not attach. Do not expose the tender places. Do not let the world inside. This can produce a sleek kind of pseudo-wisdom. The person looks unbothered. But being unbothered is not the same thing as being integrated. The difference between regulation and withdrawal. Regulation increases freedom. Withdrawal decreases participation. From the outside, the two can look similar. A regulated person can feel strong emotion without being possessed by it. They can stay present in hard conversations. They can tell the truth without flooding. They can remain open while making distinctions. They have not eliminated intensity, they have become less ruled by it. A withdrawn person may also appear stable. But the stability is purchased differently. They reduce disturbance by reducing contact. They care less so they can hurt less. They reveal less so they can be threatened less. They flatten the inner weather by thinning out participation in life. One path widens capacity. The other narrows involvement. Universal love favors the first. Peace that hides avoidance. There are forms of peace that are clean. And there are forms of peace that are merely the absence of challenge. A person leaves every difficult conversation early and calls it protecting their energy. A leader avoids necessary conflict and calls it non-reactivity. A partner stops asking for honesty and calls it acceptance. A spiritual seeker refuses grief, anger, or moral complexity and calls it transcendence. In each case, the language may sound elevated. But the underlying move is avoidance. The person is not meeting reality more fully. They are negotiating with it for a thinner experience. This is one reason calm must be tested, not just admired. Can it survive truth? Can it survive intimacy? Can it survive responsibility? Can it survive another person's pain without turning away? Can it survive injustice without collapsing into passivity? If not, then what looks like peace may be fragility with good manners. The seduction of detachment. Detachment has real value. A person who is fused with every impulse, every fear, and every social verdict will live in continual bondage. Some inner distance is healthy. It helps us observe without immediately obeying. It helps us loosen the grip of obsession. It helps us stop mistaking every passing feeling for final truth. But detachment becomes fragmenting when it turns into existential non-participation. Then the person stops being possessed by life partly because they stop offering themselves to it. Nothing reaches them deeply because they have built their identity around being hard to move. Yet love does not hover. Love enters. It remains permeable without becoming boundaryless. It stays available to sorrow, joy, responsibility, and encounter. It does not mistake numbness for freedom. This is one of the most important practical points in the entire book. The path of metta is not a path of becoming unbothered. It is a path of becoming permeable with center. Permeability without center becomes chaos. Center without permeability becomes hardness. Wholeness needs both. Why wholeness is more demanding than calm? Calm can sometimes be achieved by subtraction. Remove stimulation. Reduce conflict. Stop exposing the tender parts. Shrink the number of things you allow to matter. Wholeness cannot be achieved that way. Wholeness requires inclusion. It asks the person to remain in living relationship with self, other, and whole. It asks them to metabolize reality rather than merely minimizing friction. That is harder. It means you may be moved. You may be saddened. You may care enough to feel the cost of things. You may need courage rather than mere quiet. You may need to let love reorganize your priorities instead of simply calming your symptoms. This does not produce constant turmoil. In fact, it can produce a deep steadiness. But steadiness born of love is different from calm born of reduction. One is spacious. The other is often narrow. The role of practice. None of this means we should despise calming practices. Meditation, prayer, breathwork, walking, silence, therapy, sleep, exercise, and ordinary nervous system care can all support wholeness. Often they are prerequisites for it. A person drowning in raw stress may need stabilization before they can love with any steadiness. The caution is simply this: do not confuse preparation with completion. A quiet mind is not automatically a loving life. A relaxed body is not automatically a coherent character. An untriggered state is not automatically a truthful one. The point of calming down is not merely to feel better. It is to become more available to reality without being run by panic. If a practice makes you less reactive but also less courageous, less honest, less engaged, or less tender, then something has gone wrong. Love as more than peacefulness. Universal love may sometimes look peaceful. It may also look fierce, grieving, corrective, insistent, or uncomfortably honest. That does not make it less loving. It may make it more so. A parent intervening with clarity, a friend refusing to flatter a destructive pattern, a citizen refusing indifference to injustice, a partner speaking a painful truth without contempt, none of these scenes are necessarily calm. All of them can belong to love. This matters because people often abandon love in the name of maintaining an internally pleasant state. They do not want the discomfort of confrontation, the ache of responsibility, the risk of being misunderstood, or the burden of fully caring. So they protect their tranquility by narrowing participation. That peace comes at too high a price. It is the peace of partial absence. The peace worth wanting. There is a form of peace worth wanting very deeply. Not the peace of numbness. Not the peace of moral disengagement. Not the peace of strategic distance. The peace worth wanting is the peace that comes when the life is no longer being run by competing loyalties. It is the steadiness of a person who has one governing lens. They may still feel grief, anger, longing, fatigue, or uncertainty. But these no longer scatter them into different selves. Their way of meeting experience has become unified. This peace is compatible with action, compatible with intimacy, compatible with responsibility, compatible with courage, compatible with truth. It is not the peace of leaving life. It is the peace of returning to it more honestly. That is the kind of peace the practice in this book aims at, and the kind of peace that, in my experience, durable metta produces almost as a side effect, without you needing to chase it directly.